Morse here, so I would like him to come up, and out of respect for his time. Welcome, Senator.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. For the record, my name is Frank Morse. I'm a state senator from District 8, essentially the communities of Albany and Corvallis. I've come today to testify with respect to the bill before you, and I'd like to address my very brief comments in two areas. One is the area which would, why do we need boards of examiners? And the second issue is with respect, you know, do we need this bill? The experience that I have had personally as a businessman in contested case hearings has made it abundantly clear to me that the various professions, and not just geologists, but the various professions that we have that are licensed, there is a need for a discipline mechanism, and that comes through the boards of examiners to make certain that the work that is done with standards and the care and custody that you would expect, particularly as it relates to issues of public safety. So in terms of the role of the Board of Geologist Examiners, there is a definite need for that body, I think, to provide essentially the boundaries in which that profession is going to operate. With respect to this bill, I would encourage the committee to distinguish between what is a broad public policy and what may be the interests of a single individual. I have read the testimony that has come forth in this. I've looked at the bills, and it's my belief that this bill is really not required. I think the board may have, in fact, overstepped its jurisdiction initially. I think it withdrew that. It amended its rules, and the bill as it now stands, I think, is really not required provide essentially oversight. I think the board is capable of doing that, and in fact have and as you will hear from testimony of other persons today, that they are willing to pursue this issue from a board standpoint rather than a statute standpoint. And I guess my encouragement to the committee is that that's really where this needs to be dealt with, is within the Board of Geologists Examiners themselves, because these are not simple issues, and this bill, I think, would be a disservice to that process. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Senator. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Representative Barnhart, you want to come up and bring your friend who's tried my patience all session up with you? I've learned more about this geology bill than anything I ever wanted to learn this session. You know? You think about the things we have to deal with in this damn building, and all I get is geologists, geologists, geologists. I'm ready to shoot the board. I'm ready to shoot a couple of professors at the U of O.
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Geologists to make those dams, too.
With that introduction, I should let the committee know that I'm Phil Barnhart, state representative from District 11,
and not a geologist.
And not a geologist. Thank you. I'm not a geologist. I am a psychologist and a lawyer, but not a geologist. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that comment. I suspect there is one other topic that the chair maybe has learned even more about that he would have liked to have learned less about this session, but we don't need to go into that. This bill came about as a result of a problem that arose from public testimony at a public hearing by the Board of County Commissioners in Lane County, when a member of the public came to the board and gave public testimony about an issue that was before the board. The result of that public testimony led to a complaint made to the Board of Geologist Examiners, and a number of events followed that. And I think that members of the committee have probably reviewed a bunch of material that we've distributed about this, and probably things that they've received by email and other places, and I don't know how much detail I should go into about that. But let me in response, I think, more than anything else, to Senator Morris, simply point out to the board first that this bill establishes some basic fundamental rights directly in the statute that establishes the board and establishes the scope of the practice of geology, and makes it quite clear that it's not the practice of geology for a person to appear before a public agency and testify at a public hearing. The Constitution of Oregon, I think, is quite clear about that in section Article 1, Section 26, and also in other sections. And I refer you for further reference to the memorandum from Garrett Epps, a law professor at the University of Oregon, another professor, from March 23rd, 2003, which I included in the packet of materials that we distributed today, where he refers to a situation in which a public body or agency has solicited comments from the general public, and in which he points out on top of page 3, any citizen has a free speech right to offer his or her own view that the analyses prepared by others are inadequate, incomplete, or erroneous. It is clear that no rule could restrict citizens, regardless of their training, from commenting on geological data in the record. It's further clear that no rule could forbid a group of citizens from seeking the help, advice, and public advocacy of another citizen learned in geology and from presenting testimony to the agency or body, regardless of that individual's training or lack thereof. Now, the key point, of course, in this is that a public body is presumed to be able to test the weight of information provided to them by people, and as long as they don't misstate their credentials, that should be fine. And no one claims that Dr. Reed had said that he was licensed or registered or any such thing. So it is important, I think, to note that that citizens have this right and that it can't be restricted. I think it's also important to note that this issue has come up on other occasions in dealing with this particular board. And every board, as I've discovered, seems to have its own personality, its own style, its own way of doing things. The board I was on, the Board of Psychologists Examiners, certainly has that both advantage and defect on occasion. And it is valuable and useful, I think, for the legislature to correctly state what the law is in connection with the statute that the boards like this have to comply with.
Representative Barnard, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I mean, in following this whole thing, it appears to me as an outsider in this thing that the board, you know, and you and I have talked about this, that somehow, it's bad air in Salem or something, that these boards all of a sudden start making decisions that are highly questionable. This one, you know, highly questionable constitutionally. And it's almost like they just do it because they can, and then they get themselves in a lot of trouble making these kind of decisions. But does this really boil down? I got a letter from a professor, geology professor emeritus from OSU, and here's what he says, and I just want to know if you think this boils down the case, or just react to this. He says, anybody should be able to present testimony without being registered, and the authority for such testimony could be his or her position as a professor rather than as a registered geologist. If the professor is paid for his or her services, then he or she should be registered. For professors to be granted an exception to becoming registered in comparison with, and in unfair competition with, the consulting industry, it would be most unfair and would compound the working relationship we are trying to achieve between business and academia. I mean, given Mr. Reed, Professor Reed won his case. Nobody's arguing that he doesn't have the right of free speech. Mm-hmm. It seemed to me, though, that this started turning on a different question, which was, you know, if you're in competition with these registered people, then what's the big deal other than you want to collect consulting fees and not be registered?
Mm, thank
and
you.
Then I got this other guy telling me,
who supports the bill, saying the apprenticeship requirements prohibit an academic scientist from registering as a geologist. That doesn't make any sense to me. Is that true?
Okay. 20 years.
Okay.
I'm sure it is true. The issue here, this bill does not allow just any old buddy to go out and practice geology. This doesn't change the requirements for practicing geology at all. In order to register as a geologist, in order to sign something as a registered geologist, in order to comply with building codes and various other requirements that we have that say you got to have a geologist report, this bill doesn't change any of that at all. All it says is that anybody can come to a public hearing and talk about public matters, and including mentioning geology and talking about geology, without risk of being accused of practicing geology. That's really all the bill does.
Okay.
And it's not intended to give Dr. Reed or anybody else the right to go out and practice geology without being registered.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
So this bill doesn't allow for a professor of geology to be in competition for a consulting engineering geologist, CEG, whatever they are.
Correct. That's right. Senator Starr, yes.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, Senator.
Why are the consulting engineering geologists all up in arms about this bill? If we're just talking about public testimony and those kinds of things.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I have a theory, and I don't know whether it's a valid theory or not, but my theory is that people have been looking at the earliest versions of the bill that were written in a different way and that were confusing, I think, about what the object of the bill was. This bill's been amended and is much simplified and is boiled down to the issue that I've indicated.
That's the -1 amendments.
Correct.
From the House side.
Okay. Right. The current engrossed bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Mark Reed. I'm a geologist and a professor at the University of Oregon. This, I recognize from the exchange we've already had what some of the key concerns are, as I've recognized them before, and I'll address those in the course of a few comments here. Getting directly at a few of those initially, this bill clarifies the definition of praxis of geology, which has been difficult to interpret for a long time, and I'll expand on that briefly in a moment. In particular, the definition has not made it clear that practice means that you have a client or that you work for a third party. And that was something that was a key issue in my case because I testified on my own behalf, not for a third party. And despite that, the Board of Geologist Examiners regarded my testimony as practice. So there wasn't even any issue in that case of me working for somebody, and yet the board felt that I was out of line. The second thing it does is it protects, as a close corollary to that, it protects the rights of citizens to testify in a very narrowly defined circumstance. That circumstance is very thoroughly addressed in a legal context by Professor Garrett Epps' statement, which Representative Barnhart just referred to. That environment being invited public testimony. That is, when one is invited to testify by a county commission or a city commission or whatever to address a proposal on the table where the public is invited to testify. And the issue there is that the public, any member of the public, has the right to make that testimony. And in that context, there's not an issue, as you just raised from Professor Yates's letter, there's not an issue with respect to competition with registered geologists. There's not a competition issue there. It's a free speech environment where any citizen should have the right to speak. And that's really the key point. And as Representative Barnhart already mentioned, the idea that we would somehow be in competition with a registered geologist is, I think, remarkable. There's no basis in that at all in this bill, because this bill is very narrowly defined on the issue of public proceedings and testimony in public proceedings. So let me, I assume you're familiar enough with my case that I won't repeat those details at this point. And my experience was that I actually had to file suit in order to secure my First Amendment right to speak, and that was quite an experience for me. And there are others before me who this board had told may not speak, who were not in a position to file suit because they didn't have pro bono attorneys who were willing to go to the tremendous effort that those who helped me went to. So the key question is, and this arises from Senator Morse's comments, is, do we need the law? Do we really need this law? And to answer that question, I'd like to cite a few points. One is that the attorney for the State Board of Geologists Examiners, Assistant Attorney General, stated in the compliance hearing that I had, that is where I was brought before the board and asked to answer questions and respond to the accusation that I had been involved in unlicensed practice, that attorney stated that the existing law is horribly written. I've given you that in some of what I've handed out to you, excerpt from that meeting, which she described the law, referring specifically to ORS 672-5057, that the law is horribly written. It's horribly written, she said. And then my attorney raised another point about it being not narrow, and then she suggested it might be unconstitutional.
Okay.
So the point is, oh, sorry.
We're feeling pretty comfortable with your explanation up here.
Okay.
I did promise two other people that I would give them a few minutes, and then we're done. So I think we're fine.
You're fine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay. I would like to have... We got... John, why don't you come up? And then Mrs. Cooper, Dorian Cooper, and Dr. Steve Taylor.
Okay.
And who is Gary Peterson? And you're an engineer as well? Are you guys in the same bailiwick? Okay. Why don't you come up and then who's Steve Taylor? And the note that I got said that this was going to be brief. Go ahead, Mr. Folio.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I didn't write that note, but I'll honor it.
Yes, you will.
For the record, I'm John Folio. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Geology. I'm a former associate professor of geology at the University of Oregon. I'm a member of the Board of Geologists Examiners, and I'm a registered certified engineering geologist in the state of Oregon. I'm here against doctor's orders. This is the only bill I'll testify in the final 3 months of the session, except for my budget. And I'm here because I think that some of the issues in this bill have been misrepresented or misunderstood, and I appreciate the opportunity to at least get my perspective on the table, given some of my background. In 1977, we had land use proceedings and hearings all over the state having to do with such things as geologic hazards and resources. And into that mix, we had a variety of out-of-state so-called experts in geology coming in and basically chipping away at the property rights of individuals throughout great parts of Oregon with their false testimony. And I was concerned with this and prevailed upon LCDC several times trying to get them to consider the testimony of my agency, and they insisted on listening to these other people. Concurrently, the registration bill was passed, and I helped in its passage, in my case specifically, to interject some kind of standards and some kind of quality control and ethics into the testimony about geology in public hearings. Over the years since then, the problems have dissipated, and now we have language before you that if it was clearly intended simply to protect free speech, it would simply say a person does not practice or offer to publicly practice geology solely because the person testifies on his or her own behalf at a public proceeding. But instead, we have two pages that we have to study. And the language of 2893, through subtleties and omissions, goes far beyond the situation that we recognize for Dr. Reed. It goes into areas that would allow unnamed third parties to again come to Oregon without any oversight by a registration body and do the things that I saw happening 25 years ago. It allows these people not only to testify, but to also submit new material into the record and then to testify. And if you go back and listen and read very carefully the quote of Dr. Epps, he said a person has a right to testify on the content of material in the public record. He never said they had a right to go in and introduce new expert witness material into the public record and to comment on that as well. So instead of unifying us around the specific free speech applicable to Dr. Reed, the language of 2893 divides us with open-ended language and unclear implications, and these have yet to be examined in a balanced fashion. Those persons who wanted to testify on the House side did not have an opportunity to do so, and that is why they fill this room. There are many examples that come to my mind that I'm troubled with this bill, and I'm just left with a thought. If the purpose here is to protect the free speech of an individual to testify on his or her own behalf, then that's what the language should say. But instead, we have words like on his or her own behalf omitted, and we have the preparation for testimony as well as the testimony, and the term preparation of testimony is not defined, and that opens the door for geotechnical reports without registration oversight. So I'm concerned about the language of the bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to express my concerns. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Could I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Walker.
We all have several emails about this. This is unbelievable, the way people are ping-ponging on this. But the one question someone sent me, and I'm going to ask Mr. Beaulieu to answer this, if this law was passed, would it allow a person acting under its provisions to give absolutely false geologic testimony without review by the board? I think that is
yes,
what you were trying to imply a moment ago in your testimony.
I would say that yes, it would, because when I asked Dr. Reed about that, he said a person could be crazy and still have the right to testify.
And you think that you should have the right to oversee his testimony?
I don't think that a board has the right to oversee the testimony of an individual given on his or her own behalf. But when it's on behalf of others, it gets into a slippery slope area that the definitions and the concepts change. It's kind of analogous to a person has free speech until they yell fire in a crowded theater. I think they also have free speech until they get into areas that are ill-defined and open-ended. And the language of this bill is ill-defined and open-ended, in my opinion. Emphasize that it's my opinion, but that is the source of my concern. And since the bill is not necessarily required in the first place, because we've heard how all these free speech provisions are already protected in the Constitution, I think it's unwise to pass something that is unclear in these areas.
But you also had your own AG telling you that the language was possibly unconstitutional in the statute as it existed.
I believe if we go back, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and look at all of the testimony, all of the statements, and all of the tapes, we can pull out a whole bunch of material out of context both ways that we could throw different lights on various issues.
Unconstitutional is pretty hard to state out of context, talking about the actual language. But. So thank you very much. Any other questions? Seeing none. Mr. Peterson, I notice you have a lot of testimony here, and I don't believe we need to go over your affiliations or your biographical sketch.
Chairman Corcoran, I've got it summarized down to one quick page of notes that I can go through addressing three to four major points.
Perfect.
I'm pleased to be here this afternoon. For the record, my name is Gary Peterson. I'm a certified engineering geologist, registered geologist. I've been in private practice in Oregon since 1977. I'm a partner, owner of an engineering firm that's had a long-standing history in Oregon. That firm is a member of the American Council of Engineering Companies, which is I have their support through their legislative committee to speak on their behalf as well. ACEC is a group of about 120 companies representing about 3,000 practicing professionals in the state of Oregon, many of which are geologists who participate in all sorts of important things. I'm here today to oppose the bill because I believe it's not necessary. I believe it undermines accountability. I believe it doesn't advance the protection of the public. and I believe it sends a bad message. So I'm here to ask you to kill the bill. I neglected to say, and I need to say, I am also a current member of the Board of Geologists Examiners. That hat is off today. Today I'm speaking as a private business owner and representative from the ACEC group of consulting engineering companies. Not necessary or appropriate. This case has been addressed. The free speech issue, I don't believe, needs to be restated in the Geologist Act. Our Constitution guarantees that. I believe that's clear. I don't believe that the language in the existing statute is unconstitutional. I do believe that there are issues in the administrative rules that have been implemented some 20 years ago that did raise that question, and those were repealed. Certainly, the free speech rights guarantee the ability to research and write on any topic of one's interest. But that has limitations in the law, particularly when that writing, that product, that report is a professional technical report. I believe that those limitations are well established in a lot of different areas. I don't believe the legislature should get into adopting prescriptive language to address specific elements like this. I think that's the board's duty. I think the legislature trusts the board, entrusts the board, and the community entrusts the board to make those decisions on a case-by-case basis, and I believe that's what's been done. I think there's a very dangerous precedent perhaps being set that affects not just geologists but a lot of other practicing professionals, for example, professional engineers. Is their statute unconstitutional? I'm certainly not able to state that, but this precedent appears dangerous on a lot of different fronts. In particular, the statute changes, I believe, creates a loophole where unregistered professionals have the ability to gain standing, which, as John was speaking to, in public hearings that's not intended by the law. The prepare to testify phrase really opens the door wide open for anyone to prepare and submit materials into the public record that I don't believe is the intent of the law. I believe the intent of the law is to have practicing professionals submitting the information that is reviewed.
Mr. Peterson, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you familiar with that sub-development or whatever it was on the North Coast that got in all the trouble? I think Hatfield even had a house there or something, the Capes, yeah.
As a matter of fact, my firm looked at that project long before the final design was done, yes.
And wasn't there a registered geologist that provided the advice on that?
There was a registered geologist, actually our firm, that provided advice on that in 1979 and recommended much larger setbacks than were eventually selected. The developer went shopping for a variety of opinions, and in fact, I think what the final result was a professional engineer gave the recommendation that a 10-foot setback would be adequate. But
there was never any question that these people weren't registered?
No.
Okay. That's what I was trying to figure out. Okay.
Where's the accountability? I mean, you raise a good issue on accountability. Where is the accountability in this bill? And I'm afraid that this undermines it. Registered geologists are accountable to the board. They have to practice in accordance with standards of practice. They have to practice in accordance with ethics, code of professional conduct. Their work is subject to review for quality. The board has powers to hold them accountable. Professional geologists basically act as design professionals and are held accountable in court. If their conclusions are incorrect or they missed the boat on some issue and something comes down like the capes, they can be held accountable. Non-registered individuals with expertise or not are not accountable in these ways. Professors are held accountable by peer review when they publish articles. That wasn't the case in this instance. The substantial amount of work that was prepared and submitted in this case became part of the public record. Standing was gained as an expert, and a peer review wasn't accomplished as would be done for a professionally published paper. I'm concerned that this bill sends a bad message to agencies, land use forums, and universities. Geology is a regulated profession in Oregon, and that needs to be clear. Public agencies must use the registered geologists. University programs sometimes don't prepare geologists to understand that the registration laws will apply to them. Don't confuse this issue. It's clear that geology is a regulated profession. Public forums, such as land use hearings, have difficulty discriminating and understanding the difference between registered professionals and others with background and qualifications. This bill confuses that issue, makes that very difficult. and undermines the standing the registered professionals have in that instance where they are held accountable for their actions. My concern is that this bill really confuses those issues. It's not clear. It's a wide open door for anyone to practice in those forums and submit information in the same manner as the registered professionals do. That concludes what I have to say.
Thank
the
you,
rest
Mr.
is fluff in there.
Thank you very much.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I appreciate your brevity. Any questions? Seeing none. Mr. Taylor?
Hi, my name is Dr. Steve Taylor. I'm an assistant professor of geology at Western Oregon University. I'm also a registered professional geologist in the state of Oregon, and I'm a former registered geologist in the state of Pennsylvania. I've worked both as a practicing professional in industry as well as a teaching and research faculty in academia, so I feel that I have a fairly broad-based perspective and can provide some insights on both sides of this issue. I have a whole, two-page document here just to kind of boil it down. I'm not totally familiar with the case, but I think what is very important is I experienced in Pennsylvania, when I first started working there, there was no geologist registration, and one wasn't enacted during my tenure there as a professional. And I saw the difference firsthand between having no registration procedure and standards and then going into a scenario where there was a state board to regulate that. And I think one thing that's very important is that that there is a regulatory framework for standards and to establish a training criteria for practicing geologists. In terms of I also recognize the importance of free speech and individuals to provide their opinions and testimony in public. And my understanding is that the critical question here, just really coming in from the outside and being impartial to the whole situation, the question is, where does the constitutional right of free speech end and the public practice of geology begin? And I think that that's a fairly complicated question. I certainly wouldn't have the answer to that. And I recognize Dr. Reed's concerns, and I feel that they're complex. And given the nature of the bill that's pending, there is a potential for weakening licensing standards to the point where there will be negative impacts to the public, basically voicing the opinion of my two colleagues that are also up here.
Professor,
now. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, since you have a unique perspective on this, being sort of both a professor and a registered geologist, and coming from outside the state? As a professor, wouldn't you have some real issues with a board that, as it turns out, did in fact try to limit someone's free speech, and who had to go, defend himself against that action by the board?
Well, that's actually an interesting question, because I've had these discussions with my colleagues who are not registered, and they find it an interesting situation. Also, being an academic professional, we also have issues of academic freedom on campus, mm-hmm. and so I'm acutely aware of these issues. I personally don't have an opinion, as I really haven't thought about the issue of free speech versus practice of geology. I understand both. I can sympathize with both sides of the issue. I think my personal just review of the materials and coming in here preparing for this, I think it's complicated, and I think my understanding also is that the board has in its powers to change its administrative rules to address these issues, but that it will take myself personally. What I would recommend is convening a panel of academicians and practicing consultants and industry professionals, as well as obviously constitutional scholars, and it would, in my mind, it would take some time to look at the total ramifications of the situation. Rather than, I do agree with Dr. Yates' comment in his letter that I wrote, that a bill to suit one aggrieved individual is not the way to address this problem. I think it would take a wide range of voices from the various communities to think of all the ramifications of passing a bill like this.
Thank you. I actually think there has been quite a bit of discussion. But okay, any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Close the public hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 2893.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Menace.
Move House Bill 2893 to the floor of the Senate. with due pass recommendation.
Senator Menas moves House Bill 2893A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. President.
Senator Menas. Mr.
Chairman. Well, I actually think that the bill as written does exactly the opposite of what the industry suggests it does. I do believe that individuals who are otherwise qualified or trained should have the right under, and they do have the right under Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution to give their testimony, and in my opinion, it is what it is as it's presented to a public body. The public body has the privilege of then questioning the credibility and the credentials of the individual providing information, and it's their responsibility to determine whether or not it should weigh into their decision making. I don't think this thing negates or depletes the registration process one iota.
Thanks, Senator. Any other comments? Hearing none. Ms. Gravel, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Todd?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Hicks?
Aye.
Chair Humphrey?
Aye. So 2893A to the floor with the due pass, and Senator Menas will carry it so that we don't have competition between the other two members of the committee.
There's no competition.
There's no competition. I see.
Been left in the desk a long time.
You've been left in the desk? Okay. Don't be bad. We'll now open a public a work session on House Bill 2743. And just for anybody that's here for House Bill, I'm sorry I didn't say this earlier, House Bill 3422 is going to be held for an amendment. So we'll either hear it on Wednesday if it's amended, or it may be at some future date. So I apologize if anybody's been waiting in here.
Pardon? No.
Okay, we have no planned testimony. Oh, we do have some testimony. Okay. I think you're preaching to the converted pretty much, Mr. Mangus. That would be correct. We've moved this out of committee once already, so unless you have something additional to add, let's just go for it. Anybody have any questions of Mr. Mangus? Me neither. Thank you very much. All right, Senator Menas.
Move House Bill 2743A and goes to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation again.
Senator Menas moves again House Bill 2743A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and it won't have the constitutional problems this time. Any discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Gravel, will you call the roll?
Senator Shaw.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Hicks.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2743 to the floor with a due pass, and I guess I'll carry it. Maybe Senator Menas will have to help me out since we had a little problem on the last time we tried this little routine. So, thank you, gentlemen. I understand that there's going to be some folks watching in the gallery this time. That'll be very interesting. And they'll be wearing little caps to cover their bald head. Are you getting this, Mr. Chandler? Thank you very much, sir. Okay, good. Okay, we will close the work session on 2743, and we will open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3061A. Would you tell us what that does, please?
House Bill 3061A, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is a bill designed to authorize a governing body of a county to designate an individual in addition to the chair or the vice chair of the county governing body to be able to approve subdivision plats.
Thank you very much. And we are very lucky today to have one of the true eloquent stars of the Oregon legislature. And a very old man who thinks he knows something about land use. We have Mr. John Chandler. Please come up, sir. I'm sorry all those people are laughing at you. I have no idea why they're doing that.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, thank you for that introduction. I'll be here all week. Appreciate it. House Bill 3061A is one of those lovely bills that it creates no controversy, fixes a problem that very few knew existed, but was a tremendous headache for those to whom it was apparent, and that is under the current law, says the county assessor has to sign a subdivision plat, and the county chair or vice chair, which some counties interpreted to mean only those two individuals could sign a plat, no one else, which in some counties meant you had to track down the county chair, and there may or may not be a vice chair. that was a nuisance, particularly in counties where the county chair tended to be somewhat perambulatory, shall we say. What this bill does, very simply, is say that the assessor still has to sign county chair, vice chair, or someone else named by the county, the nice person at the front desk, hopefully, who will then hopefully also be at work on a regular basis. Commend it to you. Consent calendar in the House. Heck of a fine bill. Thank you. Any questions?
You know why I am so overwhelmingly in support of this?
I'll bite.
Because I visited with our former colleague, Terry Thompson, and his biggest complaint about being a Lincoln County commissioner was the amount of times he had to sign his name. Now, I'm thinking that has something to do with his background as a commercial fisherman and his inability to sign his name.
That's good.
So I'm going to try to make this as easy for you as possible, Mr. Chandler. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Did Chandler put on the record the name of this bill? We're tired of looking for Tom Bryan.
Mr. Chairman, I promised I wouldn't say that for the record.
Do you have a document that I should have in my file?
This bill could be entitled the We're Tired of Looking for Tom Bryan.
I'm not averse to somebody else putting it on the record, but I promised I wouldn't.
So with that, Senator Starr, would you like to move this fine bill?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 3061 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Gravel, we call the roll.
Senator Slott?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Minnick? Aye.
Chair Folkman?
Aye. House Bill 3061 will go to the floor with a due pass. Since you're lagging behind, Senator Starr, we'll carry the bill. We'll now open, let's let these nice men from the military out of here. Let's do Senate Joint Memorial 6, please. If you tell us what that does, we'll open a public hearing and work session.
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee has before it today the Senate Joint Memorial 6, which urges Congress to amend specific sections in the Internal Revenue Code in order to allow military veterans who have served after December 31, 1976, the opportunity of participating in the Oregon Home Loan Program.
Thank you. Mr. Mangus, Mr. Cruz, and Mr. Warnock, why don't you all just come up and we'll get this done. Yeah, sure. Welcome. Go ahead, Mr. Mangus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, members of the committee, John Mangus, Department of Veterans Affairs. And actually, it was my request to have this memorial introduced. And what it does is it allows, urges Congress to make a change in the federal tax code to allow post-Vietnam veterans to participate in the state veteran home loan program. The restriction against post-Vietnam veterans came about in the 1984 Tax Act, and I think that was on part of the assumption that Vietnam, although we didn't win, was the war to end all wars, and everybody went about their business, but veterans kept being made in different situations around the world. In 1990, there are only five states that have the authority in the federal tax code to issue what they call a qualified veteran mortgage bond, Oregon being one of them. In August 1990, we began working together at my request to try to change that code so we could bring young men and women that went to the Persian Gulf into the fold and allow them to use the state veteran home loan program. We have been working since August 1990 unsuccessfully to try to get this changed. We've had bills in Congress, each Congress, both sessions, and have had some luck in testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee, but have never been successful in changing this. We have bills introduced in the House, U.S. House of Representatives this time. Senator Gordon Smith is going to drop a bill in the Senate for us. Each state is trying to work on a memorial from their legislature to Congress to urge them to make this change. Five states, we don't have a lot of clout, we're building on that, and this is one more piece of ammunition that we all states agreed we would try to obtain from our legislators.
Mr. Mangus, isn't this a self-sustaining program? I mean, what is the holdup on the federal level? I'm just curious.
There is a belief by the Joint Committee on Taxation that when you issue a tax-exempt bond, that the U.S. Treasury loses revenue. And depending, although they won't release the formula on how they score, they would say because that bond is sold, you purchase it, and you don't pay taxes on that bond on the interest that's earned. In our case, we sell general obligation bonds to the state of Oregon. We take the proceeds of those bonds. We make loans to veterans, and that could be in the form of new construction. The money immediately becomes taxable in the economy, in generating taxable income back to the Treasury, but that is not a piece of the formula that's used to score on tax-exempt debt. There is a new procedure being adopted by this Congress called dynamic scoring, and that will take into consideration economic impact on the state. We're trying to get our bill scored under those provisions. And it's just, you know, it's the Treasury has been the one that fought us all these years and will continue to fight us. But fortunately this time, the chairman, Bill Thomas, is from California. California is one of our states. And so he has support. We have support there. Where it will go, I don't know. But we're asking for your help on this.
It's pretty straightforward. Do you, either one of you gentlemen, want to add anything to what Mr. Manks had to say?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Walter Cruz. I'm the legislative representative for the Noncommissioned Officers Association here in Oregon. Several years ago, our state organization submitted a resolution to our national organization on this subject, and it is still active, and so NCOA does very strongly support this bill.
I just had a funny feeling that might be the case. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Greg Warnock, Oregon Veterans Association, and this bill would affect me and many of the people that we are recruiting for membership to Oregon Veterans Association. My services after December 31, 1996, and includes service in the Persian Gulf, Iranian hostage crisis, and Somalia. And I personally support this bill, and our association supports it as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I might say that the Oregon legislature has done this on three previous occasions. So
we might get it right this time.
Yeah, well,
is that mentioned in the resolution?
For the third time.
Yeah, it starts out, whereas for the third damn time. Oh. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Do I hear a motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment that it's shameful that Congress doesn't move on this, and it's equally shameful they don't move on the Notch baby problem either. They're just waiting for them to all die, which they are beginning to do, because my father-in-law was a Notch baby. All they want is it to be fixed. All we want is these people to have the same rights as all the other veterans. And we can keep doing these memorials, but until we get some change in Congress, I don't think it's going to do much, but I'm happy to do it.
Where's Margaret Wilson when we need her, huh? Senator Minnis?
Are we in work session?
Yes, we are.
Move, is it SJM-6 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation?
Senator Minnis moves SJM-6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Mr. Bell, you call the roll.
Senator Sloan?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Corcoran?
Aye. Okay, Senate Joint Memorial 6 to the floor with a due pass. Anybody want to carry? I'll carry. You want to carry, John? All right, Senator Bennis will carry. All right, we will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 6 and open, a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3212A. Would you tell us what that does, please?
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, House Bill 3212 provides that retired members of the Oregon National Guard on state active duty status are not subject to limitations on employment with regard to the public employees retirement system. It also clarifies the difference between federal and state active duty status.
I don't believe so.
And it allows 7 days to resume duties of regular employment after leaving state active duty status.
There's amendments coming on now.
It takes effect on passage.
Are you done?
I'm done. I decided I would be done.
I never usually hear sentences that take place on passage. Thank you very much. Comma. Gary Warnock and Dennis Hoyman. Human? Hoyman. Welcome. As you guys testify, the one thing I want you to keep in mind is we did an exception for National Guard in on PERS in House Bill 325, which is over in a committee. If you could address the, if you're familiar with what we did in 325, if you could convince this committee that this isn't redundant, that it gets at something else, that would be very helpful.
Mr. Chair, Greg Warnock, Oregon Veterans Association, for the record. And I expected Colonel Caldwell to be here and a couple of other members. I think the House floor is in session and Representative Westland's in the hospital, so we're missing a few people for this.
I don't think you're going to have any problems.
Okay. My testimony here really is in support of distinguishing between state and federal employees, and that portion of this bill is we want to support the bill because it does make that distinguishing factor, and it does allow for a leave of absence for 90 days for employees of the National Guard, and so we rise in support of the bill.
Okay, provides that retired members of the National Guard on state active duty status are not subject to limitations on employment with regards to public employee. It seems to me that we did that in 325. Didn't we, Mark?
Chair Corcoran, I think 325 addressed more people who were called to active duty to replace, or people who worked to replace people who were called to active duty.
Okay. Okay, well, I guess nonetheless, we'll move it anyway, and if it is redundant, someone can let us know. Go ahead, Mr. Wyman.
Dennis Wyman, Chair Corcoran. I'm here to support this. I would have concurred with Colonel Caldwell. He would have been more familiar with it, and I know that he was in favor of this bill, and I was here in support of that. So by him not being here, without a lot of knowledge on the bill myself, I'm here to say that he was in support of the bill. He would be more familiar with it. So I do support it as a veteran.
That's fine. Did you want to say something, Ms. Mangus?
Maybe. This Department of Veterans Affairs. Sergeant Major, U.S. Army National Guard, retired. That there is a difference, Mr. Chair, and you know, the National Guard troops serve under state command until such time as they're federalized.
Oh, and this is the federalized part.
Well, and this is the state side of it, where the governor has the right to declare an emergency and mobilize certain National Guard troops for natural disasters or emergencies such as the forest fire season or floods. Some of these individuals are public employees. One of the issues spoken to here is the issue of a member of the public employees retirement system being retired and then being on active duty in excess of the statutory 1,039 hours, and this would grant an exemption to those individuals. And that was possibly the biggest issue here that I saw. And the other part was the reemployment rights. So if a person was employed, was a member of the National Guard, was called to state active duty, when he was separated from active duty in Section 2, it provides for him to be able to resume his duties within 7 calendar days after release from state active duty, and they would retain his old position. The employer would be required to take that individual back, very much the same as the Federal Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act. And it's a good bill, because a lot of times the ones that get caught up on this are the young kids, and they come back and they don't know anything about and they're worried they're going to lose their job, and I think it's a good bill.
would seem to me that this, practically speaking, would probably have rare application, because you'd have a person called under the governor's call for state service and would have to exceed 6 months. So that would be a fairly rare.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, I haven't known of any issue, individual that would have served this long. When we had the forest fires one summer, there were some people that were out there, but they were rotating through, too. It wasn't one individual for the whole length of time. And it'd be a rare instance.
Okay. Thanks very much. We're in work session? No, unless he wants to vote.
Mr. Chair.
Did he say one? Oh, okay. Go ahead and get him in.
Yes, we're going to wait for Senator Mintz.
We can wait. Go ahead and make the motion.
I move House Bill 3212A to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 3212A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Stand at ease for just a moment until Senator Mintz comes back. And colleagues, just for your information, we're awaiting some amendments on the PERS successor plan that we may have by Wednesday, and if we do, we'll go ahead and attempt to move that out then. It's basically part of a larger agreement. Representative Nope didn't quite see it that way. He thought that he could send out, I knew he was going to send out the defined contribution plan, but he basically did that because he said members of his caucus wanted that out. But the employer group that's been working on these negotiations has indicated that they will actively endorse the successor plan, which is a hybrid plan, and will recommend to the members who... The bill only passed by 30. Ms. Gravel, will you call the roll, please?
Senator Carr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bennett?
Aye.
Senator
Corcoran? Aye. All right. We have House Bill 3212 to the floor with a due pass. And how far behind are you?
Wait.
All right. Senator Starr will carry this. I just don't want to hear him whining anymore, you know?
Way behind.
Can't stand to see a grown man whine. It's just horrible.
Way behind.
way behind. You're probably like three bills behind, right?
No, he's
the judiciary. So
he's way behind.
He's
all these judiciary. I'll gladly let you carry 2020 when we do that on Wednesday.
One more?
Do we have one more bill?
No, one of them's being held off for amendments. That would be... We are adjourned. Sorry.